Solo hay dos caminos y uno que recorrer.
When you think of South America, what do you think of? I think of gauchos, cowboys, barbecues, sweeping plains, just fabulous, and maybe down south, a few icebergs. I also think, a few countries that have gone to hell in a handbasket, and Venezuela's one of them. Joining me now to talk about what went wrong in Venezuela is Christian Gonzalez. He's originally from there, but was raised in Miami, Florida, and he's now studying political science at Columbia University. Christian Gonzalez, welcome to Counterpoint.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, you've got friends and relatives still in Venezuela, haven't you?
I do. Fair number.
Sure. And in talking with them, obviously speak in a sense the same Venezuelan language, I don't mean literal language, but an understanding of the community there, is it easy to convey to others who've never been there what's going on in Venezuela?
It's not very easy. It's easier to understand the troubles when you have sort of anecdotes that you can weave together when you know about the corruption and the inflation and all the political problems. So it certainly helps for me to understand it when I hear my relatives' stories.
Yeah. Look, can we deal with the two factors that you raise that have particularly caused problems?
Yes. So, well, there are many things that got Venezuela to its current state, but two factors in particular I singled out. And the first was former President Chavez's efforts and changes to the way the oil company worked. So Venezuela's had nationalized oil since the 70s, but for the most part, the national oil company which ran it pretty much worked autonomously. It had a board of directors that was not elected and not appointed. Only the president was a political appointee. And pretty much all the people who ran it were engineers and experts, and the company was very good and very well run. But when Chavez came in, he got rid of all the experts who worked the company and put in their stead his friends who had no clue how to run an oil company, which is no easy task. And the reason he did this was because he wanted to use the oil company's revenues directly in order to fund massive social programs, ostensibly for the poor. The problem with doing that was that once the national oil company's autonomy was taken away, it became a sort of piggy bank, and all the corrupt politicians surrounding Chavez wanted to get a piece of the pie, and slowly but surely, they drained the oil company's revenues away and basically rendered it useless. And now the company's a disaster. It can't meet its payments. Its machines are breaking down. And all this happened because Chavez took it over in such a heavy-handed way for political purposes, as opposed to letting it run on its own.
Yeah. And so we're not talking about just a few million here, are we, that has been sucked out or is sucked out annually from this company, which was once one of the most efficient national oil companies in the world, not now. What are the estimates of how much comes out of that company each year?
Right. Well, we don't know for sure. It hasn't been investigated, but we've gotten estimates from people who used to work in the oil company. They put it at something to the tune of $350 billion, which is an enormous amount for a developing country like Venezuela.
But that's not per annum, is it?
No. That's in total under Chavez's tenure.
Yeah.
Yes. And that goes much of it to corruption, much of it to supposed architectural projects that never get off the ground, never are built. And even the money that is not directly stolen by politicians is misspent. So it's difficult really to get a hold of just how catastrophic the intervention has been.
Sure, but we're talking about catastrophic. We might not be able to get the right level of catastrophic, but we understand it's pretty bad. There was a second aspect too, wasn't it, which relates to foreign exchange?
Yes. So that one's a bit difficult to grasp, but the gist of it is that dollars in Venezuela are very scarce, but they're very necessary because with dollars, companies in Venezuela can import needed machinery and supplies because Venezuela pretty much has no infant industry, so it can't produce its own supplies. So they're forced to export it. Now, the problem is that the government controls who gets dollars and at what rate. And what effectively happens is that people with connections get those dollars. And instead of using them for the purposes that they state or for the purposes that they should be used for, namely investment, what they do instead is either resell them on the black market and get exorbitant amounts of bolivars, the national currency, and so that money is squandered, or they send the dollars that they get to offshore accounts and then they launder it and again they steal it. So there's a massive dollar shortage, which is enabled by the fact that the government controls the supply.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking with Christian Gonzalez, who studies political science at Columbia University, but he was originally from Venezuela, and that's what we're talking about. What you're painting is a picture of a country where those in power, either in government or senior bureaucrats, and some people in industry can stick their hands right in the coffers and do really well, but most other people haven't got a chance at that. And that's resulted in terrible inflation. And you've got an anecdote I hope you can share with us about the guy who purchased an apartment, which shows that some people do benefit, but when you hear this story, you do realise the place is a mess.
Right, so that anecdote is from the book I reviewed, Crude Nation, by a man named Raul Gallegos, a journalist, excellent book. And he tells the story of a man he interviewed. His name was Castor, I believe. And Castor had taken out a loan about 10 years ago or so to buy an apartment. And so he took out a mortgage, and the payment that he had to make monthly is the same now as it was 10 years ago. Now, the issue is that the currency in those intervening 10 years has become essentially worthless, so that the money that Castor spent on buying his house, that same sum would now buy you an iPhone. But Castor still pays the same sum every month, which is worthless. He's paying like a dollar a month for a house. And that anecdote shows just how distorted all the economic processes have become.
Sure. I mean, he's paying monthly for his house what it might cost him to, for example, get a taxi to the airport.
Right, right.
Well, how can the place survive like that? What do you understand to be the circumstances of normal working people?
Well, it's difficult to tell. A lot of people have to make ends meet by resorting to, let's say, not their normal job. So, for instance, it's become the job of a lot of people to go to supermarkets whenever the trucks come to fill up the supermarkets, which isn't very frequent, and then to buy as many products as they possibly can, and then to smuggle them across the border to Colombia, where they could get much higher prices for them. And a lot of people, if they're not smuggling them to Colombia, they are buying them and then reselling them at a tremendous markup because everything is scarce. But in short, the conditions are awful. The poverty rate, I think, is like 60%. And a lot of people's jobs just are not enough. They have to supplement it somehow, their income
somehow.
Yeah,
sure. So we've got people whose wages aren't enough to help them live. So they're into now, if you like, smuggling. Maybe it's not illegal to cross the border with the stuff, but getting goods out of their country to make money in another way other than the job that they normally have.
You said it's not illegal. That's somewhat true. Maduro's government, upon seeing that people are smuggling things across the border because they can get much higher prices for them, has tried to make smuggling illegal, but the profits are so large and the money that they get is so necessary that he can't really enforce the law. But it just goes to show how even attempting to survive can sometimes incur the wrath of the government.
Sure. And as I understand it, what you describe as broad swathes of the population can't access even basics like toilet paper.
Yes, that's been one of the more tragic things. I mean, toilet paper is not the only thing, but food is also difficult to get a hold of. People have lost a lot of weight in the past 5 or so years, not voluntarily, not because they're dieting, but because it's hard to get their hands on food. The toilet paper thing, basically the manufacturers of toilet paper don't have the supplies, again, because they can't import them because of the dollar scheme that I mentioned earlier, but there's no toilet paper, and that's certainly one of the things that you don't know how important it is until you don't have it. And it's made people resort to hoarding what little paper they can get, which of course makes it more scarce and more expensive. Or it's even become a security issue sometimes. For example, restaurants who have to monitor their toilet paper so that people don't steal it when they eat there. It's a really crazy situation.
And we do complain in the West, people living in democracies, that, you know, companies are making too much money, rich people get too much, whinge. But when you hear stories like this about socialist countries that are badly managed, you do realise how lucky we are to live in a place where, you know, okay, some people are economically luckier than others, but corruption's almost minimal compared to what you're talking about. And people can get a job and go about their daily lives and buy toilet paper and food.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, even the poorest person in any Western democracy is much better off than all but the top crust of Venezuelan society.
Mm. It's easy, I suppose, for some to look at this as, you know, a story of political scandal, and it is, to get in there and do what he's done to the oil company and with the currency exchange deals. And of all the crime and incompetence, it is all that. But as you rightly say, it's really a story of vast human suffering, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's tragic. It's a refugee crisis. I think the last estimate I saw, I might be off by a little bit, but I think over 1 million Venezuelan refugees have poured across the border to Brazil and to Colombia, and Brazilian and Colombian generosity won't last forever, and they can't absorb the entire population of Venezuela. But that's just how bad it's gotten. I mean, when you consider that millions of people are pouring across the border, you start to understand the difficulty and the suffering.
And do you have any understanding of how they're managing across the border? I mean, are they welcome, or are they meeting, you know, an unhappy welcome because the neighboring country's not ready to accept 1 million people?
Well, it varies. In Brazil, I think the welcome has been colder, partly because the language is different, so Venezuelans are having a harder time assimilating and so on. But certainly, so many people are crossing over that it's not sustainable over the long run. And I suspect Colombia, if it continues, will have to shut the border or do something like that. But Venezuelans are trying to flee. The ones who can have gone to Spain or to the United States. Many are in Peru. It's an exodus.
Yeah, and a very sad situation for those without the money to be able to move.
Right, right.
Mm. Christian Gonzalez, I'd like to say it's been a pleasure talking to you. It has, but the subject hasn't been that great. Thanks very much for joining us.
Great, thank you for having me.